Good morning and welcome to week 6 of our Roman series. This one, filming this one inside. It's misting out, and my high hopes of being able to record all 8 weeks of our Roman series outside came crashing down this morning. But I have some greenery, so things are good. Now today, I want to talk about the base note that runs throughout the entire letter of Romans. I want to talk about that refrigerator buzz. You know that buzz that's always there? You can hear it. Sometimes it's more pronounced than others. Sometimes you focus on it more than other times. Sometimes it's just kind of that background music, that background noise that's there, but you don't really notice it until you focus in on it. Now there's a certain refrigerator buzz that follows us all throughout the letter of Romans. And it's an emotion. It's the emotion of grief, anguish, sorrow. The entire letter of Romans, I would argue, is to be seen as a lament. There is something, there's an ache that Paul is carrying around with him. And his purpose in writing Romans is to express this sorrow, this ache that he's been carrying around with him. If we remember all the way back to week 1, a couple weeks ago, one of the reasons I said why Paul wrote Romans is because he had sorrow. He was filled with anguish, with grief. Here's Paul in his own words, Romans chapter 9, verse 2. I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. Great sorrow, unceasing anguish. There is this anguish that I have deep within my heart, and it's unceasing. It continues. I carry it with me wherever I go. If you flip through the book of Romans and you read some of the footnotes that are put there, what you'll notice is that Paul quotes a lot of passages from the Old Testament, and he quotes many of the Psalms. Now, the majority of the Psalms that he quotes are Psalms of lament, Psalms of grief, of sorrow. The Psalms, the Hebrew songbook, the Hebrew book of worship. You know how whenever you're feeling a certain emotion, you're going through a certain season in life, there's a particular genre of music. I had a friend, and he said every time he broke up with a girl, he would just put on Pictures of You by The Cure. He was able to feel his emotion, everything that he was going through, the things that he was feeling deep down in a real, raw way, just by putting on, I guess at that point, it would have been a tape. That's what Paul is doing here by quoting all these Psalms of lament. I mean, these Psalms, these songs, they're his songbook. They're the words, the music that he takes with him wherever he goes. He puts it on his iPod. He blasts it through his iPhone speakers. Whatever he has, wherever he goes, this is what Paul carries deep within his heart. Now, what is the reason that Paul has such anguish, such sorrow? What's the reason for this ache? He goes into it a little deeper. So let's continue. We read chapter 9, verse 2. Let's continue in verse 3. So I have great sorrow, unceasing anguish in my heart, for I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers. We could add sisters as well. For the sake of my people, those of my own race, the people of Israel. Paul is an Israelite. He's part of the Jewish tribe. He has this anguish, this sorrow, because of what is happening to his tribe. He says, theirs is the adoption as sons. Theirs the divine glory, the covenants, the receiving of the law, the temple worship, and the promises. Theirs are the patriarchs, and from them is traced the human ancestry of Christ, who is God over all, forever praised. Amen. Paul is carrying around this ache for his people, for his tribe. I mean, this is a really personal, this is a deeply personal ache. For Paul, He knows names. He can picture faces. When he feels this sorrow, this unceasing anguish, as he terms it, he's thinking of particular people, maybe family members, great friends that he has. And the reason why he has this ache, the reason why he is lamenting, is because in his belief, his tribe has lost the plot. They've walked away from their identity. They haven't lived into the fullness of the people that they were created to be. I mean, think about you in your life. I mean, we all know these people. Have you ever said or heard someone say, that person, her, him, they have so much potential and they're just not living into it. This person, they're squandering the talent, the gifts that they possess. There is so much there, and they're not living into the fullness of who they truly are. If only they would see just simply a glimpse of their greatness, of their potential. And we carry around this ache. We have a bit of pain because we think, if only they could see what they could become. If only they began walking down the true path to their truest selves. They've been living out of a false self for so long. If they could only just slightly tap in to that which is truest about who they are, then their life could look completely different. I mean, oftentimes you'll hear a parent express this. You'll hear a relative express this about a family member, a son, a daughter. Man, the potential that they have, if they could only see that potential. And then we all know people who they use all that they possess, all the gifts that they possess, whether it be wealth, knowledge, power, talent. They use all of it for selfish purposes, for their own personal gain. It's like they've been given particular gifts in life. And instead of using those gifts to bless the world, to be a gift to the world around them, they use them simply for their own gain. And there's this ache that we have when we see it, because we know something isn't right about that. There's something a bit off in that pursuit. We all know, deep down within us, we all know that we've been gifted particular things in life so that then we can be a conduit. We can be a channel of these gifts that pour out of us to the world around us. It causes great pain within me, within many of you, when you see someone take the greatness that they've been given, the things that they possess, and they use it only to benefit their own position. I mean, this is what's going through the mind of Paul. My people, my tribe, they have been given so much. I mean, he goes on, he names, there's this the adoption, this phrase, the divine glory. If only they could see, if only my people, my posse, my tribe, the people that I love, the people that I carry around in my heart on a daily basis, is if only they could see this divine glory that they've been given. I mean, can you hear the sorrow in these words? Paul believes that his people have been given a path in life. And instead of walking that path, this true path, which will lead them into the fullness of who they've been created to be. I mean, isn't that what we all desire for ourselves and for the people that we love and care about? That we would truly become all that we were created to be. That we would tap into this divine potential that we all have deep in our soul. And Paul's saying, man, my people, we've lost the plot. We haven't lived into our truest selves. we're closing ourselves off to all the goodness that is found in this universe. By turning our backs on this particular path that we've been given, we're actually closing our hearts. Instead of expanding our hearts and living fully into a life of peace and joy, we're actually turning our backs on that path and closing ourselves off to all that is good and true and beautiful about this world that we all inhabit together. So this is why Paul has this ache. And he tells us here, that basically what's happened is the reason why his tribe has turned their back is because they've forgotten their past. They've forgotten their story. They're living a life that is disconnected from where they have come from. I mean, this is what happens for any of us when we cut ourselves off from our past, when we disconnect ourselves from our story, we forget where we've been. And as a result of that, we don't know where we're going. We need to know where we've been, what we've been through. For Paul, it's what God has gifted the Israelites with in order to know how to move forward. What are the next steps to take? So the number one reason why his tribe has lost the plot is because they've forgotten. They've taken gift and turned it into entitlement. Yeah, when we forget our story, when we forget where we've come from, it becomes so easy to take the grace, the gift that we've received and move into this living with entitlement. This living with, well, I just simply deserve this. Rather than seeing it all as a gift, we move into, I'm entitled to this. I deserve this just because of who I am, or that's just my God-given right that I deserve the very things that I've been given. And they've been given to me simply for me. So the reason why they've lost the path, why they have gotten lost in the woods, is because they've forgotten their story. And so Romans, essentially, is this book, this letter, where Paul is working out this tension. This tension of, as we looked at last week, God's faithfulness to his people, despite the fact that they have turned their back and walked the other way. God's enduring faithfulness. God's continuing to keep this promise that he gave thousands of years ago, despite the faithlessness of his people. And so there's this tension, this rawness, this emotion, this lament that you feel all throughout the pages of this letter, this ache that Paul's expressing. I just wish that my tribe would realize what they're missing, that they would just realize there is so much more that God has for them. Now, Paul is not alone in his lament. Paul's not alone in his aches and his groans. Instead, Paul actually falls within a long prophetic tradition. If you read through the Old Testament prophets, if you're familiar with the Hebrew prophets, you know that this has been their thing for a really, really long time. Hundreds, if not thousands of years. The prophets come on the scene, and essentially what they tell the Israelites, what they tell the Jewish people is, you've lost the plot. You guys haven't. You haven't lived into your part of the covenant. You haven't lived into your part of the promise. You're saying this, you're saying you're God's people, but your lives so far from that truth. And instead of just bashing them, and there's a good amount of that in there. There definitely is. But what's found within that is this ache, this desire that the prophets have for the people to repent, which simply means to turn from one path and to walk a different path, to return to the path of the true, the path that they were given when this whole journey with the divine started. So yes, there's some anger that we find within the prophets, some divine anger, but that anger is motivated by grief, by sorrow. by this desire for the Israelites to return to who they truly were meant to be, to live into the fullness, the divine glory that they carry around within them. We see this in the prophets of Hosea and Jeremiah, which are actually two of the prophets that Paul quotes in the book of Romans. Paul knows the tradition. He knows what Hosea, he knows what Jeremiah have said. He's picking up on the things that they've said. He's quoting them in this letter as a way to say, hey, what I'm saying is nothing new. The Jewish prophets have been speaking about this for many, many years. I'm just continuing in that theme. I'm standing in that tradition. I mean, this is the tradition of Jesus. I mean, think about Jesus weeping over Jerusalem, weeping over his people. I showed you the path to life. I showed you the path to salvation. God in the flesh coming to this earth in order to show the true path, the path of the divine, the path that leads to real life. And Jesus weeps because his people, they've decided to walk down a different path, a path that actually takes them away from salvation, a path that takes them away from life. What we find is that the prophet's pain, whether it's Hosea, Jeremiah, Jesus, Paul, the prophet's pain, yes, it's their human pain, but they're simply expressing the divine pain. They're a conduit. They're a spokesperson. I mean, that's what a prophet is, someone who speaks for God. When they express their anguish and sorrow, they're expressing God's anguish and sorrow for his people, for his creation. So in Romans, yes, Paul has unceasing anguish. He has great sorrow within his heart, but this isn't just his sorrow. This isn't his unceasing anguish. This is also God's unceasing anguish and sorrow. God's faithfulness to humanity. Also, it creates a bit of pain. Have you ever been faithful to someone despite the number of times that that person has turned their back on you? And you said, you know what? It doesn't matter how many times they walk away. It doesn't matter how many times they betray what we have. I will always be there for them. Yeah, there's joy in that faithfulness, but there's also some pain. There's some sorrow. There's some questioning, wondering, how much longer can I do this? How many more times will I have to continue showing faithfulness to someone who has been unfaithful time and time again? So yeah, faithfulness comes with sorrow, with anguish. Paul hasn't turned his back on his tribe. God has not turned his back on the Jewish nation. God hasn't turned his back on humanity, on his beautiful creation that we find ourselves immersed in. And what Paul recognizes, what Paul discerns, what he knows is he knows this to be true. He knows his sorrow isn't just simply his sorrow, but rather it's a sorrow that goes way beyond himself. It's a sorrow that truly encompasses this entire universe. It moves through every single piece of this universe. It's a sorrow, as I've said, that God carries with him as well. Here's Paul in his own words, Romans chapter 8, verse 18. I consider that our present sufferings, I mean, suffering, it's what causes sorrow. There's a gap between how we believe things should be and how things actually are. It's the reality versus the dream. And that gap is what creates sorrow. It's what creates suffering, this need for lament, lamenting that things aren't the way we all know they should be. There's something that is slightly off. There's something that just is broken. There's a dream, there's an ideal, there's the way in which God imagines for the world to be. And we have that dream planted within our hearts. Sometimes it gets clouded over. Sometimes we don't do the things that move us and this creation into that reality. And so that gap between how things are and the dream is what creates sorrow and this need for lament, lamenting things aren't how they should. So I consider our present sufferings, they're not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. The creation waits in eager expectation. And then it continues, verse 22, we know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Paul is groaning, but all creation is growing. All creation knows there is something that isn't how it should be. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly. Just like the creation was waiting eagerly, we also, humanity, has been waiting eagerly. We've been groaning with the creation as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope, we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? If you already have it, there's no reason to hope. Hope is about waiting for something that is still to come. It's believing that goodness is just one step away. But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. Verse 26, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for. You ever have trouble praying? You just can't formulate the words? Yeah, you're not alone. We don't know what we ought to pray for. We can't formulate the words. We don't even know where to begin sometimes. Prayer ever seem like that for you? You just don't even know where to begin. There's so much that you're feeling. There's so much weight on your shoulders, and you don't even know what to cry out for. You don't even know where to begin. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans. There's that word groan again. The Spirit intercedes with groans, as if the Spirit doesn't even know the words to speak that words cannot express. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints in accordance with God's will. A couple things to look at. First, as I mentioned, this is an anguish that goes beyond Paul. The groaning that he describes here, it's a groaning that is expressed by creation. It's a groaning that is expressed by us, by all humanity. Again, this sense, this feeling, we know that something isn't right. There's something that's broken. There's something that we are missing. Even the Spirit is groaning. We could say that there's this cosmic ache that runs through every particle of this universe, and God is not exempt from this ache. Yeah, God is right in the ache with us, the sorrow, the anguish. You're not alone. The divine is with you. Essentially, what Paul is saying here is, hey, all of us, all humanity, the creation itself. I mean, think about that for a moment. We are deeply, deeply, what Paul is saying here is we're deeply connected with the creation. There isn't this separation, this disconnect. There's not to be a disconnect from the creation that we live in. But rather, we're to see ourselves as deeply connected to the creation, the world that we have been gifted. I mean, think about the immense harm that we've done and continue to do to our world. Yeah, creation groans at the harm that's been inflicted upon it. I mean, what Paul's saying is we're all groaning. We can all feel the weight. There's this cosmic ache that we all carry together. And then a second thing to note about these verses, found within the anguish are seeds of hope. You notice, Paul speaks about suffering. He speaks about groaning. He's already told us he has great sorrow, unceasing anguish. It's that refrigerator buzz that we find all throughout Romans. But yet, right in this section we just read, where Paul expresses his grief and the grief of all creation, we discover great hope. Great hope. Lament. Voicing the ache, naming it, giving it expression. The act of lament is an act of hope. Before you can begin to imagine the new, before you can begin to imagine what the next step, the new, what a picture of how things should be, before you can begin to formulate the dream, you have to name the depths of the darkness that we've been through and that we find ourselves in the midst of. I mean, lamenting, it's a prayer. It's calling out for something new to be birthed. That's where hope is found. When you can drag it all up, you can name it, you can express it. When it's no longer in the shadows, it acts like a catalyst for something new to be birthed. Paul recognized this. I mean, go all the way back to the beginning of the story in Genesis chapter 1. What was there? Darkness. Tohu vavohu. Chaos. A giant soup of mess. And out of that chaos was birthed creation. The new. It's like you have to express the chaos, the disarray that we find ourselves in, so that we can then plot a new path forward, so we can imagine together, so we can dream together. And it's not just a human dreaming, it's also a divine dreaming. When we express that, give it a name, now we can begin to move forward together into a world that is just, a world that is merciful, compassionate, a world that doesn't leave anyone behind. I mean, think about what we're going through right now. The protests that we've been having as a nation, protests globally as well. It's a form of lament. But in that lament, there is hope. There's hope that this time things can be different. Everyone who's on the streets protesting, everyone who is protesting on their social media page, everyone who is standing up and voicing what they're feeling and what particular communities are feeling, they're lamenting. And they're saying, there's this ache that we feel collectively, and no one is exempt from this. Because what affects one person, it affects all of us. Because we're all interconnected. We're interconnected with the creation as well. We're interconnected with the divine. So if one person feels this ache, we're all feeling it together. If one person is feeling sorrow over the condition of this world, to some degree, we all feel it. Sure, we can turn a blind eye to it. We can turn our backs. But the truth is, it's still there and it's affecting us. And the only way we'll move forward together, the only way we'll move forward into something new, into a beautiful new way of organizing and structuring the world, it's for us to name the darkness, the violence, the sin, the injustice that has brought us to this moment in history. It's confessing it. It's vocalizing it. It's putting words to it. It's no longer allowing it to rest in the shadows. I found this quote this week. It says, violence arises when we do not know what to do with our suffering. Yeah, violence arises when we don't know what to do with our suffering. How profound is that? When we're suffering and we don't know what to do with it, we don't have an outlet for it. A healthy outlet for it. When we hold it, stuff it in, eventually we break. I mean, we have a phrase for this. It's called going postal. There's only so much suffering we can carry around with us. There's only so much suffering that we can stuff deep down into our souls until eventually it spills over. And it leads to violence, unhealthy ways of working out our suffering. Oftentimes, there are other times we act out our suffering in violent ways. We don't have a channel for it. What Paul's doing here, I mean, this is Paul's therapy, in a sense. It's Paul saying, hey, I've been carrying this. Maybe you feel it too. This is the ache I've been feeling. Let me express it, because I have to get it off my chest. I have to tell everyone about it because it's bothering me. And I don't want it to move me into despair. I don't want it to bring me to a place of cynicism, a place where I lose hope. And the only way for Paul, the only way forward, the only way to continue grabbing hold of hope was to express the ache that he had, this unceasing anguish that he couldn't stuff down. He couldn't just keep within him, but he had to let everyone know. He had to connect his anguish with the anguish and sorrow that others were feeling. I mean, for some people, and this happens for many of us, there's this feeling. This actually leads to a third point, which is sometimes there's no words. I mean, sometimes you have a feeling, you have an emotion, and you don't know how to express it. Maybe you're feeling this right now. There's sorrow, there's anguish for the state of our country, the dividedness, the conflict that we see, the violence that's erupted within our nation. And there is this sorrow. Maybe you know some people who have been deeply affected by the things that the injustices that we as a country have allowed to exist for many, many years. And you have this ache within you, this grief, this sorrow. There's this lament. You want to lament and cry out, but you just don't know where to start. Emotions do this. You ever have such a strong emotion, you try to put it into words, you vocalize it, but you realize that words fall short. There's no words that could capture exactly how you're feeling. Yeah, Paul recognizes this. Listen, where are we? Verse 23. We groan inwardly. Sorry, this is verse 26. We don't know what we ought to pray for. Yeah. We don't know where to begin. The Spirit is also groaning with words, groans that words cannot express. I mean, even the Spirit, the divine Spirit, is speechless. And there's just groans. You ever go to a funeral or you're around someone who gets bad news and there's this groaning, there's this screaming, this crying out. There are no words to express deep pain and anguish. Paul seems to know this. And he tells us, yeah, there's moments when that ache you feel, it's so raw and so deep that no sentence, no words could capture exactly how you're feeling. But it's okay. The divine understands. The divine pain is similar to our pain in the sense that the Spirit just simply speaks and utters groans as well. Sometimes there are no words for what we're feeling. And then a fourth point to make here about these couple of verses, and we talked a bit about how lament is an act of hope. It's imagining a new way forward. It's shouting out, I believe things can be different. I mean, here's Paul, for it's in hope, for it's in this hope that we were saved. This hope that we were saved. We are saved by hope. Hope saves us from despair, from cynicism. Hope saves us from the belief that things can't change. Hope saves us from the belief that tomorrow is simply going to be a repeat of today. Hope comes into those feelings, those moments, and says, hold on. Yes, right now it looks bleak. Right now it looks dark. There are many reasons why you could give in to despair, but hope comes rushing in to those moments and says, hold on. The story isn't over. Hope, it saves us. It saves us from a path of death and destruction. Hope comes in and says, there's more going on here than what you see. This hope we were saved, this hope that love is stronger than any other force in this world. It's the hope that love truly wins. We looked last week about God's faithfulness. Believing that, trusting that is an act of hope. Trusting that God is forever faithful to you, to humanity, to creation. And believing that, it's an act of hope. When you trust that story, it can change your life. It can change the path that you're walking. It can save you from the despair and cynicism that so often creeps in our culture. We are a culture of cynicism. It's almost as if we are a culture that has lost hope. Lost hope for who we could become individually and collectively. Maybe the protests, maybe the crying out, the groans, the aches that are being expressed right now, maybe they're a sign of hope. What if they're a sign that we as a culture will no longer let cynicism be the emotion or the dominant path for us in our world? What if these cries are us collectively saying, we've had enough cynicism and despair. Now it's time to hope and to imagine a new way forward. I think about the story of Jesus. Jesus, who is at the center of Romans. I mean, for Paul, Jesus is where it's at. I mean, think about the story of Jesus from death to resurrection. And Paul talks about this move from death to life all throughout this entire letter. I mean, because Jesus is right at the center of who Paul is. I mean, Jesus is the lens through which Paul looks at everything. Death. I mean, can you get any darker than death? Can you get any lower than death? Death is to be seen as the end. Yet for Jesus, death wasn't the end. But you have to go through that death in order to get to resurrection. There's no other way to get to a resurrection. Lamenting is, it's going through a death. It's moving through death so that then you can find your way to resurrection. Hope is believing that after death doesn't come the end, but after death comes resurrection. Hope is trusting the story of Jesus that, yes, takes us to the darkness, but doesn't leave us there, but moves us through the darkness into life, redemption, as Paul says, into resurrection. Yeah, so lamenting, it's an act of hope. When Paul laments all throughout Romans, he's offering all of us reading this, his original audience, every single person who will ever read this, he's offering us hope that things can change, that the divine is always with us and always bringing life from death. So this week, may you give voice to that ache with whatever words you can muster. May you groan. May you shout with Paul. May you express the darkness that you see within you and the darkness that you see around you. And as you do so, may you find healing. May you come to discover hope. May you find the divine spirit with you in the act of lamenting. And may you move from cynicism, despair, into hope, into life. May you be saved from any destructive path that threatens to steal the very life from your soul. May you be filled with hope this week. And may it fill your heart with joy and with new possibility for what we together can become. Grace and peace. Amen.